Everyone, welcome to episode 10 of Marketer Pitch, the news and trends podcast from a Vantage Black and Brown perspective. I'm Yesenia Reynoso, one half of the co-hosting team, and to my opposite end is the other half of the squad, co-host and friend, Corey Davis.
Hi, everyone. Hope everyone is having a great week, and I never get tired of hearing you say the squad. I like it. So, hello.
It takes great pleasure to know that we have finally found an introduction with the word squad in it. You know, it's always part of the PR of wizardry.
Yes.
Well, anyway, a quick advertising announcement to catch up on all episodes and be part of the Marketer Pitch atmosphere. This podcast is available on all main podcasting mediums: iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, Amazon, iHeartRadio, and many more. Like, comment, share, subscribe, even leave us a review. And don't forget to also email us at marketerpitch@gmail.com. All opinions are highly welcome.
Yes, and I actually will just ask a favor, everyone. If you, if you've heard our previous episode, episode 9, which is an admiration and honor of Black History Month, I would recommend that you re-listen and send it to a friend, because it's a very important episode, not only to myself, but I think it's for the industry, just with issues facing the Black community, as well as highlighting some of those Black leaders and pioneers who have shaped and changed the advertising, marketing, and PR industries. So I definitely think it's a very pivotal episode for you to not only listen during Black History Month, but just share it with friends so that they can make a different perspective. Different from their own. So definitely please check out episode 9, which is our Black History Month episode.
Yes, please listen to my friend Corey, because episode 9 was truly such an informative conversation. I hope everyone really enjoyed our Black History Month episode last week. It really touched all the bases, regarding issues, that impact the Black community. And so it's really inspirational from that standpoint. I've also heard from many friends of mine who have heard the episode and absolutely love it. So please share it across your mediums, because this is such an important conversation to have.
Yes.
Well, with that in mind, I want to welcome all of you to March. And from Black History Month, we are now going to shift focus to Women's History Month. So happy Women's History Month. We will now be celebrating and honoring all of women's accomplishments and our continued push towards a fair, equitable world. It's absolutely incredible to see how far we as women have come in our society. We can do anything we can set our mind to. And don't forget, next week is International Women's Day, which has become much more prominent in the yearly calendar.
Yes.
Okay. So, in honor of Women's History Month, we at Marketer Pitch will be duplicating a similar episode format like Black History Month. So we will be doing a very special episode at a later date. So tune in. So circle that on the calendar. All right. So with that, we'll move on to the 2021 Golden Globe Awards, which aired this past Sunday on NBC. Amy Poehler and Tina Fey hosted in a bi-coastal award show. Fourth time that they both have hosted the program. You could tell that the show was vastly different in terms of energy over the last few years. The big winners were Nomadland, The Crown, Borat, among others. Corey, did you catch the Golden Globes? And what does this mean for the awards weights moving forward?
So I actually watched very little of the award show. So I'm going to take a step back and just hear my thought process of the Golden Globes. So last week, a few days ago, the LA Times actually had an expose with the Hollywood Foreign Press. So everyone who's not familiar, the Hollywood Foreign Press, 87 members, I believe, are the makeup of the people who decide the nominees and also who vote for the Golden Globe winners. To be a part of the Hollywood Foreign Press, you have to obviously write entertainment in America for a foreign press. So let's say if you are a journalist who writes entertainment for The Telegraph in the UK, or a paper in Germany, you could possibly be one of the 87 members of the Hollywood Foreign Press. So with that said, the LA Times had a big expose this past week of two things. First, which is, shouldn't be a surprise to a lot of people, that there is not one person of color, specifically no Black person, that makes up its 87 members. So this group, for the past 80 or 60 odd years, I'm not sure how long the Golden Globes has been around, but definitely 20 or 30 years, has never had a person of color on there. So we are allowing one of the big award shows to be decided by a largely white majority. Not only that, the LA Times also had a piece that historically the Golden Globes are, because they're so small, they're 87 members, compared to the Academy Awards or the SAG, which are made up of fellow actors and thousands of members. 87 members is a lot of people that you can actually do things for. And it was reported that there's particular production companies and shows have wine and dine these nominees as a, or excuse me, as the Hollywood Foreign Press as a way to maybe get a nomination or maybe influence their decision to win. Specifically, I believe Warner Brothers, who makes Emily in Paris, which was surprisingly nominated. I think in episode 2 or 3, we kind of talked about the show and how weird it was. It was nominated for a Golden Globe, and it was reported that Warner Brothers flew all these 7 members to France, and they wined and dined them at a 5-star hotel in Paris. They took them to the south of France by the beach. So it helped because they got a nomination. Thank God they didn't win. I saw that they didn't win, but they got a couple of nominations. So for Warner Brothers, that was, you know, maybe 87 members. That cost could have been a few hundred thousand dollars, but that could be worth saying that you have a Golden Globe nominee show. So the onset of a listen to that expose and specifically not having any members of color, I was just taken aback. I was like, I really don't want to give energy to these kind of shows, because why am I allowing one of the biggest shows to decide what's popular when they don't have a membership that looks like myself or looks like you? So that was my opinion. So I was out and about. I actually did catch maybe 30, 45 minutes of it, but I really didn't really care to watch that. And that was a long-winded way to say I really didn't watch it. What do you think?
I think at this point, in terms of the lack of diversity, which is obviously systematic across all industry sectors, I think we need to start developing a countdown and start ranking which companies have, in terms of ignorance regarding diversity, is by far the most ignorant. And so this issue surrounding the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, it was not in the slightest surprising, to say the least, off maligned due to the LA Times investigation, you know, that details that the HFPA doesn't even have a single Black journalist among its 87 members. And also, I also find it kind of funny that, you know, Emily Paris, a show that has been constantly ridiculed, was nominated, you know, for 2 Golden Globes, whereas one of the shows that I thought should have been nominated was the HBO series I May Destroy You, because that one was, I'm streaming it right now on HBO Max, and I can't even begin to tell you that, in my opinion, was one of the best series of the year.
Yes, so, I actually watched that show too. I definitely watched that show, and that show is very, 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 very good. So, and it just, to me, I'm just baffled at the fact that it didn't receive not one nomination.
Yeah, but but again, we're gonna keep going back to this issue over and over and over again, you know, until these organizations, you know, start making some real adaptations, you know, to their strategy as to try to, you know, develop or bring in much more representation, this is going to be a continued, never-ending cycle. So it was evident, you know, from the stars, you know, they kept pointing it out to them, the lack of diversity and representation, you know, throughout the awards show. So at least they're talking about it. But again, we need to see action. So if you really want to address it, great. But we need you to do more. You need to actually, you know, take charge and actually push for it. Be a real ally, as we have discussed in previous episodes. But to quickly wrap up before we move on to the news headlines of the week, you know, basically, there was a lot of Zoom awkwardness. Technical difficulties amongst, you know, the nominees and the winners accepting of the awards. It was great to see, you know, some a big night, you know, for the Black community, where several actors won major Golden Globes for their respective acting categories in TV and television. We witnessed history when Chloe Zhao won Best Director, who in a year where we saw three female directors nominated for the, you know, for the show, and also some of the movies like Nomadland and The Trial of Chicago 7, you know, also, you know, make headwaves during that night. So it's going to be, you know, very interesting to see, you know, just how the Oscar, you know, the race to the Oscars is going to further develop as we move along award season.
Yes, and a kudos to Andra Day. So Andra Day, the singer, she made her acting debut in the Billie Holiday biopic, and she won her first Golden Globe. She's the second African-American to win the Best Actress film. I believe Whoopi Goldberg won it 35 years ago. So she, which is sad, it's 35 years apart, black actresses winning that award. But kudos to Andra Day. Also, definitely rest in peace and kudos to Chadwick Boseman. He also won for Best Actor for Ma Rainey. And his wife, I did see that she accepted the award on his behalf. And it was just very raw and very emotional. But I definitely want to, you know, just highlight Andra Day and Chadwick Boseman. Also, I haven't seen this yet, but I definitely want to see the Black Messiah, Judas and the Black Messiah, by Daniel Kaluuya, who everyone knows from Get Out. He won for Best Supporting. So there was some big winners among African Americans last night, and that's great to see. But I definitely think overall, the next few years, the Hollywood Foreign Press needs to do better. And before we do end this, because I definitely want to hear both sides, the Hollywood Foreign Press did acknowledge that they do need to do better, and they had a statement, and they do say, and I quote, we understand that we need to bring in Black members as well as members from other underrepresented backgrounds, and we will immediately work to implement an action plan to achieve these goals as soon as possible. So I do want to add, the Hollywood Foreign Press did acknowledge this, and they are doing better, before we move on.
Absolutely, my friend, you hit all of the right notes, and so we'll wrap it up with that and dive in into the show. We got double news headlines of the week, our ad chat and bulletin board segments, and a special Women's History Month trailblazer shout out, I should say. So we move on. First up, the news headlines of the week. Headline number one comes from Bloomberg, titled Twitter considers subscription fee for TweetDeck unique content. Twitter is building a subscription product as a way to ease its dependence on advertising, a plan the social network has considered for years, and one that has taken on a heightened priority given the pandemic and pressure from activist investors to accelerate growth. Corey, thoughts?
I find it very ironic. They said they've been considering it for years, but they only launched it after OnlyFans, which it's... to go there, everyone knows a lot of OnlyFans is known for X-rated material, but OnlyFans can be a lot of actors, a lot of people, everyday people who are on OnlyFans who are doing non-sexual content. And then Patreon is another paid platform. So I find it funny that they've seen these other platforms doing it. So they said, oh, we've been thinking about this for years. We're just introducing it after these other companies have already made money and have already cornered the market. So I find that funny, but I don't get it. I think I read it and I'm looking like, why would I pay more money to be a super follower? I'm not going to do that unless the Twitter's really is saying that they want those performers and those people who are on OnlyFans or they're on Patreon with paid podcasts and paid events. Then unless they want them to come over to Twitter to have only one social media platform. But I really don't understand who would pay for this. What do you think?
I just have to put a question mark in my head because we knew for many years that Twitter has been wanting to do this for some time in terms of developing a subscription service of some sorts. They just haven't found the right formula. However, it's not surprising since social media companies have been trying new ways to make profit. We eventually will get to a point where social media platforms will try a subscription service of some sort. All it takes is one, and the rest will follow. Interesting tidbit that I found in the article, Corey, that the majority of Twitter's revenue comes from targeted advertising, which serves up promoted posts aimed at specific groups of users. So that kind of tells you right there in terms of strategy as to what Twitter wants to do. Also, I think we're going to get a quote-unquote free versus paid model, meaning people are going to be spending it on a product that has been, has been free for since its inception, basically. And if you're going to enter into the subscription world, your product or service better be top-notch, high quality, in order for people to be engaged and spend money, point blank.
Yes, and I mean, Twitter, they should pay me to, as a consultant, but I'm gonna give Twitter a piece of advice. And this is actually, it's a famous Bill Gates quote from the 90s, but content is king. If Twitter really wants to make make additional revenue outside of the sponsor advertisement, don't do this paid subscription model. Develop content. Develop things that people actually will want to go to Twitter to watch. Twitter has the ability to be, people can immediately react. Imagine if like an Oprah Winfrey show from the 80s or 90s was on Twitter. Imagine if award shows were on Twitter, where people could immediately see other people reacting to comments and things like that. Twitter needs to have abilities to maybe develop a show, maybe develop a streaming show, and you watch the first episode of a streaming show and there's people commenting on that streaming show at all times. You can see comments where you're watching your favorite your favorite action show or drama show, but definitely Twitter needs to get into the content game. I thought if they get into the content game, I'm buying unlimited stocks and shares of Twitter.
Corey, you should really be their consultant because everything you said just hit right on the nail. And before we quickly move on to the next news headline, some of the subscription options that Twitter has been testing out ad-free feed, TweetDeck, exclusive content, which you just mentioned, higher quality video, verification, analytics, and consumer features. So again, unless if your product has to be high quality, you know, in order to charge people, in order to get people engaged, I think you hit right on the nail in regards to content, Corey. Why don't you just focus on that, Twitter? Make sure your content is highly engaging and relatable so that people can actually, draw themselves to it.
Yes.
All right. From a well-known prominent platform, we shift to one that's about to be the next big thing in the tech world. I'm talking about Clubhouse. Headline number two comes from Chief Marketer, Clubhouse app. What brands need to know? Clubhouse, the hot new social audio app frequented by celebrities and influential business folks, including Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg, has generated a lot of buzz as of late. And now brands went in on the action. Corey, have you ever heard of Clubhouse?
Yes. Who hasn't heard of Clubhouse? The hottest club, virtual club that you can get into right now. So for people who are not familiar with Clubhouse, it is a social, like Yesenia just said, it's a social audio app. But the only way you can get in is through an invitation. How do you get an invitation? An exclusive member who's part of the Clubhouse can send you an invite. I believe they have up to 10 invites they can send out to the people they know. That's the only way to get an invitation. You can't go to clubhouse.com or go to the download the app and just sign up like you can do Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat. You have to be invited. So that ability, just doing that, makes people just want to, I want an invite. I want to see what this hot thing is that everyone is. I want to get into the air quote club. So Clubhouse has been very popular. I know there's Elon Musk, like you said, he went into Clubhouse and did a speech. I believe up to 5,000 people can be in one room. And in his speech, he broke records and crashed the app. Celebrities are on there. There's been a lot of celebrities going back and forth and fighting. Oprah Winfrey's on there. Shonda Rhimes is on there quite frequently. Ava DuVernay is on there quite frequently. So a lot of people like using Clubhouse as a way to have a closer interaction with the celebrities and with the famous people that they love. But also, there's some people who business and they do networking on Clubhouse. So it definitely is very popular. I definitely think that brands are going to have an issue getting involved, because I think the minute where people see Clubhouse getting commercialized, a lot of those same people who are interested in Clubhouse that brought them to the site because of these celebrities are going to take a step back and like, wait a minute, maybe I'll just go back to Twitter, because this is just becoming like all the other apps.
Oh, yeah. We're witnessing the rise of social audio, my friend. Too little text, video too much. But Clubhouse has been able, up to this point, been the most successful social audio platform to break through into the sector. And people are talking about it. And there is, you know, I've heard about Clubhouse just a few months ago, and now it's starting to pop up more across social media channels. I ended up watching a tutorial on Clubhouse. And so far, its growth has risen more than 6 million users as of February 1st. So its prowess is really starting to become more well-known. And with any new thing, the other more prominent platforms are actually trying to copy what Clubhouse is doing. Like, for example, Twitter is widely testing Twitter Spaces, as well as Facebook is doing something in the works. So why are we surprised about this? But very quietly, you know, brands have been investigating a Clubhouse. The first three that... you know, that started to experiment with this are then Kool-Aid, Slice, and Square. So at least those three major brands are testing the waters with very short 30 to 45 minute general Clubhouse rooms. They're basically looking for a reaction and engagement. But there's also a serendipity factor that Clubhouse brings, because many people find themselves listening to dialogues between reporters, celebrities, scientists, artists, and other prominent individuals. And so I think, you know, from a brand standpoint, I think it's, you know, since this is only, you know, into the introductory phase, if you want to get into Clubhouse, just make sure, you know, you get the invites, familiarize yourself, you know, within the app, and then, you know, take the lead in terms of understanding what the brand represents, the policies, who do you want to bring into, you know, into that Clubhouse world, who can excel, as well as develop different types of, you know, procedures, you know, to ensure that, you know, your teams, you know, amplify themselves, are aware of the opportunities. And obviously, you know, monitor the situation to see as to how people react to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with that, that is the end of the news headlines of the week. If you have any questions about any of these segments, email us at marketerpitch@gmail.com. And with that, we move on to Corey's Ad Chat, where Corey offers his analysis into a specific marketing topic. Buddy, take it away.
Hello, everyone. So my ad chat from this week, it comes to us from AdAge.com. And I may add for people, AdAge.com, I get a lot of my ad chats from there, because it's a very great, publication. So I will probably ask people, if you're going to subscribe to one advertising magazine, and this is definitely not an ad, subscribe to AdAge, because there's so much great material, and those journalists over there know their stuff. So regardless, my ad chat comes to us. It's all about, I'm sure everyone has heard last week, the big stir with Hasbro's Mr. Potato Head, and how their article is titled, "How Potato Head's Half-Baked Gender Overhaul Could Hurt Their Brand." So, as I mentioned, that last week there was a very big uproar over Hasbro's Mr. Potato Head changing its branding to, and I quote, "Potato Head to be gender neutral." The change by Hasbro was announced last week at Hasbro's Investor Day. As soon as this was announced, the outrage and backlash began immediately. Mr. Potato Head, or Potato Head, as is now known, had thousands upon thousands of think pieces against the decision. New segments, and I add, mostly from right-wing media, saying that it's PC culture run amok. This sounds very familiar to something I just did, but... and a boycott of the Hasbro toy. Within a day of the backlash, the company appeared to backtrack, noting that Mr. and Miss Potato Head would remain on toy shelves, but be joined by a, and I quote, create your Potato Head family gender neutral kit. They added that Mr. and Miss Potato Head will live under the Potato Head brand rather than Mr. Potato Head brand umbrella. I just said potatoes a bunch of times. I probably want, people probably want french fries right now. Now, before I begin, I want to add that this decision is definitely noble, and I understand issues of gender conformity. I think it's great in theory that a company is looking to make their products gender neutral for children, but that's where my kudos end. I have two big issues with this decision. The first issue I take is with Hasbro themselves. The fact that the company was not prepared for a backlash and did not have a fully baked rollout of a name change. They didn't call my friend Yesenia and Y Communicate for this communications crisis. I'm going to go out on the limb and say that Hasbro was looking for a way to jump on board the social issues that are impacting our country and not being genuine. After Uncle Ben and Aunt Jemima's name changed, I feel that Hasbro was looking for a way to get good press from a toy that, to be frank, has not been very popular with children today. I don't think Generation Z even knew what Potato Head was before last week. Hasbro figured that they could announce this change at some conference, get good press, cover articles, hopefully increase sales from parents applauding the move. But that obviously did not happen. And I just want to say, here is a warning to brands. Please do not come off as disingenuous. This is very evident from the quick backtrack from Hasbro after the right-wing backlash. If Hasbro really cared, they would have held their positioning and tried not to squeeze their way out of the issue. I find it funny that just last week in my ad chat, I talked about the same issue with Pepsi changing their name from Aunt Jemima to the Pearl Milling Company. I specifically warned brands about dealing with backlash when they are changing branding to better reflect the times. Hasbro clearly failed here, but Pepsi did not. So you're saying, what's your thoughts on the issue? I'm sure you heard about it, but what do you think of the name change and the fallout from it?
Well, I think the main thing is that, you know, toys must reflect consumers' values, which are particularly important now. Hasbro has done that, as well as others, and it must continue. But I will admit, the rollout of the now Potato Head toy announcement caused a tremendous amount of confusion, and they dropped the ball with the fact that they should have held their stance as to why they're doing it. Listen, it's understandable that toy brands are catching up with the times and making their products more gender neutral. So applause on that regard. However, we're still seeing resistance and resentment among conservative groups about this issue. So it's a delicate balance. But at the end of the day, Hasbro should have thought better in terms of execution. But it should never be deterred. It should not deter brands, I should say, from continuing to push more diverse and gender neutral products. We need to, from a brand's perspective, we need to catch up to the times. We now need to, you know, we need our products and services to reflect what is going on in our society today. Yes, you're going to be dealing with a lot of backlash, and Hasbro should have been much more prepared on that front in developing and executing and crisis communications, you know, to deal with that. But at the end of the day, it's generating a conversation, no matter how uncomfortable it is. To talk about these issues.
Yes, and I can add, I know historically people, especially with these gender reveal parties, everyone says, "Oh, it's pink for girls and blue for boys," and that's just the whole. People say, "Oh, that's just the way it's been." That's actually not the case. In the early 1900s and late 1800s, it was actually the opposite. That boys were dressed in. They called this a masculine color. Boys are dressed in pink, and then girls were dressed in a feminine color like blue. So this shift changed, not surprisingly, commercially. It was an incentive for brands and companies when creating products to have a change. So this actually did change. So we don't have centuries of genders and women being pink and boys being blue. So this whole notion, the whole idea that this is changing the makeup of society is completely wrong, because society was changed 50, 60 years ago when they said girls were pink and boys were blue. So I find the whole backlash I'd be very comical.
More comical and hypocritical on that part, my friend.
Yes. And with that, I am done.
Thank you, Corey. Such an important conversation to have. If you have any thoughts on about his ad chat, email us at marketerpitch@gmail.com. He definitely wants to hear from you.
Yes, please.
All right, now on to my PR bulletin board, where I give my two cents on a specific PR theme that audiences should keep an eye on. This week's bulletin board comes from Reagan PR Daily, where I feel this needs to be emphasized and brought back for this matter. Back in December 2020, Reagan did their annual Top Stories 2020 countdown, when they mentioned Tesla's decision to eliminate its PR department altogether. The original announcement, which was made by CEO Elon Musk in October 2020 via Twitter, that the company decided it no longer needs a good relationship with the media. Obviously, journalists, as well as experts seeking confirmation, don't even know who to ask, and also was befuddled by this decision. First and foremost, what? Second, why would Tesla do such a bonehead move? Again, regardless of how you feel about Musk, look at this from a business standpoint. It's alarming to know that companies may want to do this just because the CEO, or a prominent senior exec for that matter, can't even handle an ounce of criticism that comes his or her way. What Tesla did was a show-off move, a sign that Tesla's PR department simply cannot compete with Elon Musk's approximately 40 million Twitter followers, or that Musk himself can't take an ounce of media criticism. Hey, I will be too if someone tries to pull it off. Everyone was stunned. Tesla's PR department managed to correct misinformation and create some great content over the years, all while working under the pressure of a boss who infamously has become enraged with bad press coverage. It's their job. It's what PR pros are supposed to do. Create content and put out the brand fires. Given the current climate, PR departments have to tread water between the truth and misinformation. Why? Because narrative matters. If you can control the message, you can basically shape perceptions any way you want, especially if you have a large following. What we see now is the resurgence of corporate communications and the need for brands from both a for-profit and non-profit standpoint to have someone or a plan in place to navigate through the internal, external, strategic, and crisis communication circles. They all interconnect. We've seen organizations go at this alone. It depends on your operational, financial, and philosophical standing. But we have seen how companies struggle at not having a consistent brand or message. We've also seen in terms of media relations how the media can easily pick you apart if you don't prepare or give actual facts. If something goes wrong, you better hold yourself accountable. Now, calling someone out on their flaws or a mistake is a quote-unquote sin. So what are some of the lessons that the industry can take away from this move? Here are just a few. One, owned media channels offer brand power. Basically, the main takeaway is to create a direct connection to your audience. Again, we talk about credibility, authenticity, and relatability. All of that matters. Two, PR pros must do more than write a simple press release. In other words, make yourself indispensable by becoming a business expert who has communications knowledge throughout. Companies, will make aware of that for that innovation. And three, trust comes at a premium. At the end of the day, the PR pros who have good relationships with the media and offer true value to journalists will have a role to play for organizations, so that way they can set themselves up as invaluable assets. Corey, let's hope this does not become a precedent for companies in the future. Organizations need PR departments for reputation and factual purposes. You can't live without them, but Tesla says otherwise. Thoughts?
Tesla is riding a wave right now. Their stock prices are higher than ever. Elon Musk is the richest person because of the high stock prices. He's the richest person in the world, even more than Jeff Bezos right now. Teslas are doing great. So when things are doing great, of course you don't need a PR communication team, because you have the stock, you have Wall Street, you have everyone to speak for themselves. The problem is, tomorrow, let one of the Tesla's automated cars malfunction and cause a huge accident or car pileup. Let Elon Musk do something that's very illegal. Let Tesla's workers who protest over not being in a union. Let something bad happen to Tesla, and Tesla will very quickly realize the need for a PR team, because you can't build a PR team overnight. So the fact that Tesla has a big issue specifically around their cars and the safetyness around their car, it's going to take them at least a month to get a functioning PR team up and running to have a message to send out. And that time frame, a month, can kill that brand. Teslas can go the way of the Pinto, which was an 80s car that was very popular, but quickly had issues, and quickly people stopped buying, and they quickly went under. So I definitely think that Tesla is very short-sighted, and they're looking at their positive PR, positive press, and things going great right now. But all it takes is one big accident to change things overnight.
You don't really want this to be a worst-case scenario. This could potentially send an extraordinary, dangerous precedent for blocking the free flow of information and the impact of the media's availability. Ability, I should say, to cover an organization's activities responsibly. Any kind of disengagement can result in dramatic reputational ramifications with long-term consequences. Strategic and now corporate communications are a critical element of reputational management. It is fully robust, functioning, effective, and transparent. The last thing you need is to deal with a crisis that blows up in your face and your reputation damaged beyond belief. You'll lose credibility with your audience and never recover. And with that, wraps up my bulletin board. Any opinions? I definitely want to hear from you. Email at marketerpitch@gmail.com. Now, last week, Corey introduced an advertising ad exec, Trailblazer, in honor of Black History Month. This week, we're doing it again, but this time in honor of Women's History Month. My PR game changer is Barbara Harris. Harris, born in June 1930, became the first woman of color to work with major corporate accounts and brands while working at the first Black PR agency, Joseph V. Baker, founded by Baker himself. She later worked for the oil firm Sun Company, where she distinguished herself as a leader and public relations expert. A major activist fighting for civil and women's rights, she also was a woman of faith, in which she eventually pursued during her latter years. Hats off to Barbara for making a major impact in the PR and religious circles.
Yes, kudos to her.
All right, and with that, episode 10 has now reached its end. Corey, final thoughts?
No, I definitely can't believe we're on episode 10, and I just welcome everyone's thoughts and feedback. I know Yesenia has mentioned this a couple of times, so please just email us at marketerpitch@gmail.com for any feedback. Let us know how we're doing, and let us know if this information that we're giving you is important to you.
We definitely want to hear your feedback. It's incredibly important to us, so please do. Thanks to our audience for tuning in. Don't forget to like, comment, share, subscribe, or leave a review. Email us at marketerpitch@gmail.com to comment on any of our segments. Remember, your feedback is what's going, you know, to transform this show and do it in a way that is that highly reflects who we all are. The podcast is available on all major podcasting mediums to catch up on this and all 9 episodes. We'll see you next time for episode 11. Take care.
Bye, everyone.